Like, I'm not supposed to be talking about these things like that. This is me being out of my comfort zone and talking about it.
Okay, welcome to the dark side. Come on over.
Welcome, fam. This is Courtney Russell Jr., and I'm here with my co-host, Emily Brocker.
Welcome to Humanize.
We are two Americans with totally different backgrounds and life experiences.
We're coming together on this podcast to dive right at the heart of the three things that shut down tough conversations about race: culture, power, and ego.
The stories you are about to hear are meant to humanize those deeply involved in social justice. Welcome to the work, y'all. Let's get it.
The Humanize Podcast, Season 5, we back at it. I'm just so happy to be here doing this. We're in the living room right now, extra close, extra high, talking about these issues, talking about these topics. And today we're going to do a debrief of an episode we had on last season, but it was just so great. We had to talk about it right now, and I think it's still important. CRT. So let's get to it. And let's see what kind of trouble we can stir up today with talking about, what does CRT stand for again?
That would be critical race theory.
Critical race theory, yes. So let's get to the work. We appreciate y'all. Love you so much.
Awesome. Okay, so today what we're going to be talking about is an episode we released last week, or last cycle, with Dr. Roberto Montoya. Highly recommend listening to it. I just love listening to his ideas. He is a great thought leader. And there's so much to explore in there. So that's what we're going to do today, is just kind of have a moment to react to different pieces that stood out for us, and see. I'm also kind of curious how you know, the discussion just around race consciousness might be related to or relevant or shine light on what's happening in the Middle East now with Israel and Gaza, more specifically Netanyahu and Hamas. Yeah. we haven't had a chance to discuss that yet. So do you have something that kind of stuck out from the episode when you listened to it?
I mean, everything, honestly. I think he's a brilliant, brilliant social justice warrior. And just the fact that he lives and occupies both spaces of poverty and now fighting for individuals that are still occupying that space and does it unapologetically as himself. It was such a great episode and such a great thing to witness. Mm-hmm. Because that's how I view the work that I do, as a very audacious social justice warrior, and hoping that I can redefine love in a way where it's not seen as a synonymous weak, but something that has to be done to really change the world. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hopeful, and I was very excited to be in the same space with a like-minded warrior. And the whole episode just highlighted and kind of validated the fight that we're doing, that mm-hmm. I'm doing. And it was just an awesome thing mm-hmm. to witness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I want to maybe kick it off with listening to this quote that was towards a snippet that was towards the end of the episode. So let's listen to that first.
We would rather be blind to what is in front of us than deal with it. Because one, the dealing with it might have us actually do the necessary self-reflective atonement work that is needed to advance our humanity. And that's what I'm in the business of. I'm in the business of humanity development. Mm-hmm. The vehicle I use is equity. The goal is justice. But I'm really like, when I'm telling folks, if you're developing humanity, that work is perpetual. It's never ending. And one way to develop a more deep, real sense of humanity is to ask yourself, what does it mean for someone else to have a dignified experience? Mm-hmm. Not to center my own dignity, but what would it mean for us to center others' dignity? Mm-hmm. And that requires more than being self-centered, requires more than being selfish. And it requires an understanding and an openness to seeing the world through someone else's
eyes. So when I was listening to this, there's something that's just like, I don't know. It was both a feeling of like getting stabbed in the heart and slapped in the face around like choosing blindness.
Yeah.
And the implications of the willingness to choose that. And I think this was a piece that for me in what's going on today in the Middle East was really making some sort of connection or like a painful connection of when in the U.S. here we're seeing, at least everything I'm about to say is my opinion, there's lots of opinion on this, the falling into a temptation of oversimplifying what's happening, mm-hmm. and you know, a big rise in anti-Semitism, and you know, hearing reports of people shouting like "send the Jews back to the gas chambers on university campuses." When how are we how simplified has a mind gotten that we have, you know, a country that was under a horrible attack, and then we have, you know, Netanyahu's super conservative government doing things, and then now it's extrapolated to all Jewish people around the world. And we have Hamas hiding under hospitals and schools, and then it's the people of Gaza, and then it's Gaza versus Israel, and it's East versus West. Yeah. And that to me has to have an element of choosing blindness, to not be willing to see just how incredibly nuanced this is. And everyone that I know who's closer to this than I am is just almost like paralyzed by the nuance, paralyzed by the history. So I'd be curious to kind of explore that idea of like choosing blindness. How does that benefit us as a species?
It doesn't. I honestly think acknowledgement of any issue is the only way forward. Because when you choose blindness, history has already happened. And if it's not acknowledged, it will repeat itself. You know, we're looking at the coalition is in Gaza. That's a historical situation that's coming to roost right now. And no matter whether you're a Palestine side, Israel side, whatever it is, the absence of acknowledgement is going to continue to fuel this situation that's going on right now. Unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree. And it's so pervasive and widespread, and there's got to be parts of me that's choosing blindness on certain things too. Yeah. Right? And like, ideologically, I'm like, we want to be more awake. We want to be more aware. We want to understand more realities. But that's not how humans typically function. And I'm sure, and I, you know, in fighting my own unconscious bias, I can feel just how upstream it is to work against those ways that the mind kind of wants to shut down, wants to overgeneralize. Yeah. And I mean, is it all self-protection, group protection, tribe?
I was going to say that. You know, when you... when you benefit from a system, you're almost protected with that benefit, right? So if you are a white person and you're benefiting from white supremacy, you may say audibly, "I hate white supremacy." However, there are certain things about white supremacy that you choose sometimes unconsciously or whatever to be blind to, because it's benefiting you and it's almost keeping you and your family safe. Mm-hmm. When you are an oppressed class, I honestly feel as though because you are the oppressed class on the end, the ones being affected by the oppression, you don't have the luxury of blindness, mm-hmm. because you are the one that's being affected by the oppression. So, it's whether we want to admit it or not, everyone would say, "Hey, I would want to wake up one day, I don't have to worry about getting shot." I don't have to worry about like where I'm going to school or what I'm going to eat today. Mm-hmm. And so if you live in a system that was built to cater to you and your family, you have to be honestly brave to go against that. Mm-hmm. And if you do, you also have to know that your family, your loved ones may be affected by a decision for you to turn over a system that's benefiting you. It's a weird dynamic. Like, how do you live in that world?
Right. And what's happening to the souls of the people that are doing that? Like, there's some sort of is choosing blindness the option that's open to people who are privileged, no matter what that circumstance, like, yeah, whatever aspect of their identity, like, they get, yeah, to choose. That's the privilege, is blindness, and to have those
100% or blind spot. Like, if I could walk, like, I don't think about walking every day until something happens, mm-hmm, where, like, I tore my Achilles and I have to think every time, I got to get my crutch. I got to make sure this door is open. I got to hold it like this. I got to step like this. That's a lot. So when we think about individuals that are disabled, I'm in a privileged class. I don't have to think about using my feet. Mm-hmm. I just get up and go, mm-hmm, you know? And so if you always have to think about race, that starts to get into you. That's a lot to think about. Versus if you don't, you don't have to think about it. And why would you want to think about it? Mm-hmm. So you actually have to do certain things against your best interest at times, mm-hmm, so that you can do some soul work. Mm-hmm. Because soul work is not comfortable.
Right.
Yeah, like, soul work is not something that's, I mean, it benefits you, because this work benefits everyone, mm-hmm, because we're inextricably linked. But if the benefit is for individuals that are oppressed so that you can be an ally, sometimes that's going against what may be the best interest for you and your family at the present, yeah, time.
I feel I like there's so many, what we're talking about, so many different connections with different parts of, yeah, what Roberto talked about. It's, yeah, almost overwhelming. Like, one thing he referenced really quickly in passing was the American Disability Act and ramps, which is a really interesting example of how everybody benefits from equity work. And, yeah, specifically with that, I think it was in the 70s when they started to make cutouts in curbs so that people with wheelchairs can get more easily onto sidewalks.
Yeah.
What they didn't expect was how many other people would benefit from that. You know, people with strollers and people, yeah, with bikes, yeah, and people with Achilles injuries. You, yeah, know, like, there's so many unintended benefits for all of us when we do equity work. And yet I'm at a point with my work that I'm just so, you know, doing diversity, equity, inclusion work, it's so exhausting, the resistance of trying to convince people that I'm not trying to attack people, that I'm, you know, like, we're just trying to uncover blind spots so that we can all,
yeah,
you know, rising tide lifts everyone on all the boats, you know, like, we're, but it gets so entrenched. And again, this comes back to what's happening in Gaza, where the divisiveness feels more important than the dignity that people are asking for.
Yeah. I think a lot of times individuals feel as though if I oppress you, I win, mm-hmm, because I have to be in power and take your power away to truly be powerful, mm-hmm, you know? So it's a perspective. And it's like, whenever I honestly feel like if everyone around the table is powerful, I've always said this, like, then I am more powerful, because we all can do more if we're all more powerful. Mm-hmm. Now, if I subjugate and put down and oppress certain individuals, now I feel as though I am more powerful. That's actually weakness, because now I have to look out for that person coming to get me. Mm-hmm. You know, I can sleep better at night knowing that, mm-hmm, I let everybody else eat, versus just like, so if I'm a white guy and someone says, why is everything about race? Why do you always got to talk about it? I think that if I'm an ally. And I may not be in poverty now. However, if I elevate someone's life or affect change in a certain way in legislation that elevates this family, I can stop being so afraid in communities of color. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's how we all are affected, because people think, like, poverty is just, I want to stay. People don't like to commit crime generally. Mm-hmm. That is done because there are no other options that are seen or felt or known. And so you have shoes, I need shoes, what's next? Mm-hmm. I'm going to beat you over the head so I'll get some shoes. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a lot of times what it's about, you know? And so instead of thinking like, that's your issue, this is my issue, I'm all right, you got to pull yourself up. If we all do whatever it takes to change systems of oppression, everyone benefits. Mm-hmm. Everyone benefits. From if you increase access to healthcare, that's less money being spent in healthcare and more money being spent other places that we can do other things in our community, mm-hmm. like education. Mm-hmm. If less money goes to jails, more money goes to education, we have more individuals not in the poor middle class. Mm-hmm. The economy starts to get, like, it's just so much things, so many things that can happen once the system of oppression are started to be really and truly addressed. And so that's why when you go blind to certain issues, I really feel as though you shoot, as an entrepreneur, you're shooting yourself in your foot, because right now you may oppress someone and get an upper leg, but sooner or later it's going to come back around where either you, your family, or your generation is going to feel the trauma that you caused by not alleviating some pressure or some pain with an influence, addressing a certain issue or something like that. So it's in our best interest to see and not be blind.
One of the things that you talked about as one of the ways to see and not be blind, and let's bring in another quote here.
And so kids, though, how we create this consciousness, this honesty, right, within young folks. And it is dishonest to deny history.
Yeah.
And we know, you know, the problem with curriculum, we know the problem. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation, right? And so what's interesting is, like, they're trying to ban something that isn't even taught.
A blind spot for me, because I've never seen it really kind of roll out. Like, I want to teach my young kids, so they're 6 and 8 now.
Yeah.
Awareness of, you know, I guess the theory is to start with themselves, to solidify the sense of, like, who am I? So to kind of bring forth this consciousness of their whiteness.
Yeah.
I am having trouble in doing that, creating this awareness of their whiteness as not defined as not otherness, you know, like it's strange. It's a hard piece for me to, like, uplift their whiteness, you know, like I'm trying to be like, celebrate yourself. Cause I do believe that that's a great first step to consciousness.
Yeah.
And a step that is often criticized. Like, people often assume that race consciousness would be making white kids feel bad about themselves, which I don't believe needs to be part of the conversation. And there is going to be complex emotions that come out once they really start learning history. But in our household, we do end up talking more about what is happening to Black people, what is happening to brown people, and rather than, like, what's happening to white people. Because for me, it's like, you know, it's the water they swim in. So it's hard for me to be aware of that. I'm just wondering if you have a vision of, like, this is going to be a great question. Yet again.
Let's do it.
This is horrible. Again, totally centering whiteness here. I'm sorry. But, like, what does it look like for white kids to be aware of their whiteness? Like, what does it look like in the short term and the long term? Because I have to say, like, I haven't seen that happen before.
I don't need white people to feel sorry about slavery. That's not doing anything for the culture. That's not doing anything for us to progress. What I need is an honest acknowledgement that it happened, and what now? Mm-hmm. All right. And so when individuals say that, if you teach kids about history and be historically conscious, it's going to make them feel bad, I don't think that's true. I think there are going to be complex feelings, mm-hmm. because you're talking about almost a genocide of a whole race of people. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Two feel, at the same time.
Two, yeah. And so if you feel happy about that, that's an issue.
Yeah.
That's crazy. You know? So, like, it should be a certain way. But out of that, I think it's very powerful, because now you start to think about, it happened. People that look like me did that. Now what? Because, right. like, if you have a disease and you came to me and I said, you don't. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And you die because you have the disease. That's worse than admitting it and taking steps to alleviate mm-hmm. your pain and mm-hmm. cut out the cancer. You uh-huh. know what I mean? Uh-huh. And so, again, I go back to acknowledgement. If you don't acknowledge, you can't address. Right. And so kids, children, millennials, young individuals, they have a different, like, mindset and energy, and if we harness everyone's like skills, that will be a powerful movement. Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, you shouldn't know about this, slaves were slaves, they weren't treated horribly, they were workers that were given, they did certain things that built our country, and that's it. Mm-hmm. That's a bold-faced lie, like, you know what I mean? And so you are handicapping individuals that could be a part of something that could change the world, because without knowledge, you don't have anything. Right. That's more, knowledge and information is more important than money.
Yeah.
Because you can make money, but if you have false information, you are perpetuating bullshit.
Right.
Like, it's honest. So you just continue, instead of getting a tire for a car, you ride on a donut or you have a rock. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, rocks should be fine.
Exactly. Yeah. Keep on building a rock and put on your car. You're not going
maybe
anywhere.
A snowball.
I don't. Yeah, exactly.
We're going to get back to the episode in just a moment, but we wanted to give a quick shout out to our supporters on Patreon, as well as our supporters who have bought our merch from our website. Our podcast is principally sustained and propelled by listeners like you. And we wanted to make sure you knew how to get on that train. So to support us on Patreon, please go to the Patreon page and look up the Humanize podcast. There we have some exclusive content that we haven't released to the wider public, as well as ways to engage with the community. And if you want to check out some of the Humanize merch, the t-shirts, sweatshirts, mugs, and different things, go to our website, thehumanizepodcast.com, and select shop at the top. And all of that support that we receive financially goes directly to our amazing editing team and making sure we're bringing you the highest quality content you can get. Thank you. And let's go back to the episode.
Yeah, I mean, case in point, but whatever. Sorry. <Uh-oh. laughs> Well, she texted me the other day with her daughter's, a picture of her daughter's AP history textbook, where it kind of mapped out where people were living in a certain period of time. I think it was probably 1600s or something, and the slaves were grouped in with the immigrants. And yeah. So like the notion is that this was a group that voluntarily came here, that were just like non, I mean, who, the immigrants, weren't all the white people immigrants?
I was
like
about to say.
What is that? Like, this is a very confusing,
yeah.
And it really, what strikes me when I'm listening to you is just how we underestimate young people's ability to deal with complex emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm, again, getting more into this climate justice piece, and it's like, we got to deal with some really complex, really complex things, which are, you know, we have to deal with it together, and we need to build that muscle. But I can, like, stand here and ideologically believe that, but I'm like, what does that look like talking to my 8-year-old white daughter, you know? And
I mean, just honestly, for me, honestly and unapologetically doing it, because I think that's synonymous with like love. You never want your kids to grow up and start to understand and research and find out and come at you like, yo, mom, dad.
You tell me.
What was going on?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And so I think in order to again, walk down the road to freedom, it's never going to be easy. Because if it's easy, everyone will be doing it. Mm-hmm. And so in order for us to really create the change that we say we want, like, you have to be audacious enough and ready to say, this is what happened. I love talking to white people about these kind of issues, especially when they're open to understand and be in the grapple, because it's like, now, what are we going to do? All right, cool. Mm-hmm. Now, let's do it. Mm-hmm. Because it's easier for me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so as a white person, I feel like if it was me, again, this is just coming from my crazy ass mind. I know there's so many other things to think about when you think about kids and family. But I cannot see myself living whether I was in the life of my son every day. If I was a white person with the privilege that I had, I feel and hope that I would be in a space where I could say, hey, family, loved one, wife, kids, I have to do this for what I believe in. Because if I don't, you don't want that type of father. You don't want that type of husband. You want someone you can be proud of. Mm-hmm. And I think that I would have to still live the same kind of life. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, but again, I don't judge. I try my best to lead by example and would never shame or denigrate someone who feels though they want to do it in another way. Mm-hmm. You know, because every way is needed. This is just my way that I feel passionate about to lead. And that's very much unapologetically, audaciously, loudly, making sure it's heard and doing it in a way where you know what I stand for. There's no guessing.
One of the things that Roberto said towards the end of the episode was, like, you know, when this all boils down to whether it's CRT at a graduate level or race consciousness in elementary school, we want to get kids to be asking better questions. And I know you work with youth.
Yeah.
How do you get them? Is that something you focus on?
Yeah.
Is that how do you get them to ask better questions?
By not saying what they should know, teaching them how to think. Like, I would rather you ask a question like, or say something like, I don't like black people because, why do black people have to do this? I don't want you to just say, I am a Democrat, I am a Republican. I want you to understand issues and come with your own thing. Mm-hmm. You can learn how to think and not be told what to think, mm-hmm. you know? And so any question, I welcome, you know? Anytime a student has something, whether other students, I try to make it known that that's not a dumb question. Mm-hmm. A dumb question is one that's not asked and one that's not investigated. Because in any question, there is something that can be learned, you know? And so as a person that is always questioning, I feel as though it can be annoying, you know? Like, it can be a lot, you know? But if you always take what's given to you, you don't, A, know how to grow. You can't fail.
Right.
Because failure a lot of times is seen as something that should be avoided when you only learn through failure.
Right.
And so if I say the wrong thing when it comes to culture and race, that's a teachable moment. And I do it opposite too. So if I'm talking to a white kid that says something to me, says the N-word, mm-hmm. right? I'm not like, why the hell would you say that? I'm like, yo, do you understand the historical situation? Or what's going on with that? Why do you feel comfortable enough to say that? Let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's a better way to learn versus shaming someone into not saying something that has caused the death of people that look like me.
Right. Yeah. I feel like in the 80s, we had this the political correct movement, which was like, this is how you talk about something or you don't talk about it, which shut down conversations. Yeah. And today's version is cancel culture.
Yeah.
Like, if you say, if you make an effort, you know, in any direction, and it's not how, it's not in a way that doesn't offend anyone, then we got to get rid of you.
Yeah.
And it's, God, it's such a slippery slope, because it's like, I want to hold people accountable and help people, myself included, you know, move towards a less offensive way of being.
Yeah.
But how I'm seeing it play out is that people are just telling me what they think I should hear.
Yeah.
Right. If I want to challenge someone on like white supremacy culture or like thinking in a certain way, then I'm not getting honest responses.
No. And you could lose a whole job.
Right.
And your whole family could be affected.
Right.
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 And so like, who wants to jeopardize a lifestyle because you said the wrong thing at the wrong time in the wrong room, you know? And that's, but it's dangerous.
Right.
Because now you secretly have thoughts and feelings that can cause more harm. It's a bad cycle.
It's a bad cycle.
Yeah.
And it's been going on a long time. I mean, I feel like it really kind of became more poignant in the 80s, and then it's just kind of like stuck around. I thought we were in a different place, but yeah, I mean, do you feel like you can have that conversation that you were just the hypothetical conversation with the white person that said the N-word, like, and hold them accountable?
Oh, kinda? Yeah, I do. You know, I would definitely say, yo, nah, that's not okay. Mm-hmm. But I would also do it in a way that goes back to love. Mm-hmm. Like, I love humanity, you know? And I don't have to know you, but if we're having a conversation, Mr. White Man, and you call me the N-word, in love, I'm going to bust your ass first, in love, and then tell you why I had to let you know that that word is like, it has some cultural significance, that you, that word was used to make sure I knew my place, right?
Uh-huh.
So if you... Why I would ask a lot of questions like, why are you saying that? Did you hear it in the song? Do you want to unpack it? Do you know the history? Mm-hmm. And one or two things gonna happen. Either the person leaves, they don't want to talk to you no more, mm-hmm. and that's okay. Or we have a great conversation, and that person goes off and disseminates information to other white people about something that we had, and I've created a small ripple of change that can really affect that person, that person's family, that person's future, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I welcome every moment to speak on uncomfortable things because I don't know what the next person is going to have the opportunity to have learned from me, you know? And so like, and me too, like, so if I have a conversation, I just learn a perspective that possibly I didn't know.
Right.
Like, damn, you know? Okay, cool. If I'm talking to a disabled person or a woman or any other marginalized group that I'm not a part of, mm-hmm. like, yeah, if I'm talking to a handicapped, gay or transgender or a woman of color, any of those identities that I don't embody, like, that's a teachable moment for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I have to work, if I'm a true civil activist, I have to understand, like, it's just not, I'm just not here writing for people that look like me, that move like me, that embody the identities that I embody. Mm-hmm. I have to be, to hold everyone down
mm-hmm.
in every facet, every marginalized community, everything. And individuals that are not marginalized, I got to make sure that I know a white, cisgendered man perspective, because if we align, that's another room I can get into.
Mm-hmm.
Activism for me is selfish. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, people are like, what are you talking? It has to be for others. It's not for others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love humanity. I don't care about the emotions of a man. I love humanity as a whole. And so mm-hmm. in order for me to have the life that I want, I have to make sure humanity feels me, you know? And so like, I have to be selfish on my pursuit towards freedom. Because if I don't like sustain my own life in a way or create a legacy of myself that I was out there laying my life on the line, I don't think that freedom will be reached, not just because of me, but because of the representation that it can be done by the work that I'm trying to do in the world. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I try to live my life. And when I'm talking about those hard topics, I talk about it in a way that after the conversation, what if I'm gunned down? Like, that was the last thing someone heard, was me showing them love about a very uncomfortable situation, you know? And so, like, I live every day, like, this podcast. After we finish this podcast, God forbid something happens where I no longer exist. The last thing people heard was, you know, he said that, and now the mantle can be for a white, black, transgender, male, cisgender, white guy. Anyone can pick up the mantle and start to move, just because hopefully the inspiration that I gave for them. So everything I do may be the last thing. And when you live in that mindset, it's difficult, because I'm always like, all right, I'm here right now, but damn, could be my last time I'm here with Emily. I gotta kill it. All right, let's go. So if I cease to exist, the last interaction that we had was inspiration to you. Mm-hmm. And you could feel it like, all right, cool. I don't know what's next, but thank you.
You said something in there that was, I'm curious if it takes a toll on you. Like, I imagine that, I don't know what numbers you put to it, but like, if I'm in a room of 50 people, maybe I really get to one or two people, right? There's a lot of people that walk away, and you also said, you know, with your original example with this white hypothetical white boy, you'd be okay if he was like, I'm not open to learning about this. Does it take a toll on you, like the numbers of unwillingness? Or do you just try to focus on the people who are there and listening and curious?
Some people gonna die. As a doctor, you know that you can't save every single life. Right? It is what it is.
Hopefully your statistics are not 1 in 50 when you're dying. Exactly.
That's true. That's the trend, you know what I mean? And so with the social justice work, there will be individuals who will not be aligned with you. There were black people that were like, I don't want to be free. I don't know what that looks like. I'm safer being a slave, and so I'm gonna stay here, Harriet. So Harriet said, if more people knew they were slaves, I would have freed more people. That's a crazy quote. You know what I mean? Like, and so like, if you live as a slave and you live in that life, you start to normalize that, and that's comfortable. It takes an audacious, crazy person to say, maybe I shouldn't be chained. This shit just don't feel right. But I don't know what life would look like as a free person, and we still don't. However, I don't like what I feel like as a slave. So, yeah, some people, you just got to realize at the end of the day, everybody's not going to align with what you align with. As an artist, everyone's not going to like your music. As a painter, everyone's not going to fuck with your paint. You know what I mean? So as a person that is a social justice warrior, everybody's not going to feel the way you feel about race, culture, even the people that look like you. Some individuals come from the suburbs that are black, living a life where they feel like, I got my situation. I came from that. I don't want to go back there. That's cool. I don't feel any kind of ways. I don't hate them. I actually love them. And I got to move on to individuals that I can touch. I can't spend too much of my mental real estate thinking about someone who is not welcoming or wanting for us to have a change, exchange in perspective. I got to only talk to individuals that feel it and understand it and want to progress towards freedom. And so it is your right to live how you want to live. And I also cannot worry about how many people I reach. If I reach one, that was the one I was supposed to reach. If I reach a million, I appreciate that. I don't, the numbers of that, I don't care about. Yeah, so there's no toll. I'm going to do it if I'm talking to myself blue in the face in the mirror versus if I'm talking to a stadium of a million people. Mm-hmm. It's still going to be the same intensity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else? I've been kind of getting the conversation with what stood out from the episode. What else stood out to you?
Just how, I mean, Roberto, he talked about family. You know, he always came back to mother, grandmother, auntie, individuals that really impacted his life. And he let it know that he stands on the shoulders of the giants of individuals that paved the way for him to be a doctor, to be in this space, to be fighting, you know? And so I appreciate that because you are never the person that 100% made you who you are today.
Right.
You know, it's always somebody, you know? And so like, again, I thought about my family, you know, and so good, bad, ugly, everyone in my family made me who I am today, you know? And so everyone's just doing their best and trying to survive the best way they can. And I think it's the job of children to do it better, you know, to push the thing. And so I'm just trying to push culture in the way I'm trying to push it. And hopefully any kids that I may have, you know, is going to do it better than me. That's or anyone that I touch, I just wanted to make sure that I set the stage so that when you come up here, you can do it better than me. That's that's the goal. So that really impacted me. I'm trying to think about what else.
About the family thing, there is something like so hearing him talk about family.
Yeah.
It's like such a reminder of like, oh, right, we're not just a flash in the pan, we're part of lineage.
Yeah.
And I was surprised how reassuring it felt to just hear that invitation. And one thing that we talked about when we were in my garage in 2020 starting to record episodes and we didn't really do this was like one thing we threw around was like beginning each episode with like inviting our ancestors into the conversation and imagining them on the room like a web behind each of us, you know. And I crave more of that, you know, like of just understanding the past. And like I did a deep dive on, as far as I could on ancestry.com, just like trying to understand. But I wish that was more of my daily consciousness.
I'm just trying to think, like, what would my mother, father, sister, grandmother, grandfather think about me doing this? It'll be a lot of like mixed, like, why are you talking? My parents would be like, why are you talking online about your feelings? Because it probably like everybody in your business. My sister would be like, yeah, call that trouble, you know?
She was our first guest.
Yeah, exactly. You know, then you got my grandmother who's just unapologetic, you know, both mother and father, you know, so just to think about the community. And then you, I mean, I call everybody family, you know, so like, it's hard for me to just separate that because sometimes your family's not just blood, you know, it's like, I view you as family, you know what I mean? I view individuals that I just meet sometimes as family because I feel like I told you before, I love humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And I love what that person represents. For me, it represents the potential and opportunity to create a ripple that's going to affect change. I don't know the person, you know, but that person is an opportunity for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, and so like for my company, where I merge, individuals don't understand that at a point in my life, very lowest part of my life, I created a shirt that kept my mind hopeful. Mm-hmm. Of a future. And so when I see someone else, a student wearing that shirt, I'm like, it grounds me. You know what I mean? It's an opportunity. Like, damn, I am supposed to be doing this. All right, cool. Let's go. Uh-huh. Because who motivates me?
Right.
You know what I mean? An opportunity motivates me.
Mm-hmm.
I get really excited about the potential, about what's next, about hope, you know? And so like when I'm thinking about this work, and we were talking to Roberto, I got so excited that I didn't want to say nothing and just observe and absorb everything he was saying because it was potential. It was hope, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's in the legislature. He's in the classrooms, education, you know? And so, like, just knowing the reach that he has gave me hope for, like, okay, so this work is being done by other individuals. Damn.
Not alone.
Damn, that's dope. You know what I mean?
In his own way.
In his own way.
You know, like you, yeah, yeah.
So that's, I get excited about that a lot.
Yeah, totally. I get that. Yeah, thank you. When you were talking about like your family and how they might feel about you talking about these things, just to bring another piece of like current culture into this, is I just finished watching the David Beckham documentary. It's like four episodes on his career and his marriage and stuff, which it was recommended to me. I wasn't going to watch it otherwise. And it was really fun, first of all. What an athlete. But one thing that I was like laughing at myself and my lineage is how often, you know, part of his story after he made a huge mistake in a World Cup final was not talking about it and not showing people that he was upset and like the stiff upper lip and like how much his family in the UK was talking about, you know, keep it in, don't tell people. Yeah. And I was just like, there's this comical part of me. I'm like, those are my people. Like, that is
that's
so,
what we do.
That is so where I am from, like from the Northeast, from New England. And yeah, I think there's definitely a part of me definitely like on this podcast being super explicit that my family's like, it's so nice that you're doing this. How about you don't tell people
exactly
that you're doing it? Exactly. Because like you're breaking the code, you know, but there's actually like a comfort in that. Cause I'm like, I'm so seeing it. Like I'm not supposed to be talking about these things like that. This is me being out of my comfort zone and talking about it. But like the, yeah, I don't know.
There's welcome to the dark side. Come on over.
I was just like, yeah. And oh my God. Yeah. Anyway, that's what I'm resonating. You know, David Beckham and I are just like really close, you know.
That's your homeboy. You know, we had dinner last week.
Posh Spice. Exactly. Anyway, those are my people. How did we get here? Yeah. I don't even know how we got here.
We're here.
Who cares? Okay, we got to wrap this up. But yeah, so Roberto started this episode by just like putting out there, like, how do we call people in? You know, how do we create more curiosity? And I just also wanted to like align with that in my hopes that this, you know, our podcast does that to some people. Create a curiosity. We don't have, right? No. You don't have to agree with us to like our podcast.
No.
You can just be like, huh, that's crazy. I wonder what these guys are going to have to say about that. So, you know, like curious.
And if you don't agree, come on and let's go to work.
We were still trying to invite some people who don't totally align with us. I reached out to, you know, people from Moms for Liberty and they weren't too excited about coming on the podcast. I'll keep working on it. That's the thought that just goes through that whole episode for me is like curiosity and that like where that comes to life and that energizingness of it. I feel like it's such a, you know, maybe that's my own advice for myself with my kids is like, how do I keep creating curiosity about race, curiosity about self, other, and where self and other aren't actually separate.
Yeah.
Are my thoughts.
That's sound good to me. You know what I mean? I don't know how to close it, but that's why we do this work, man. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I really feel honored to be here. Really humbled by the opportunity to talk, to use my voice as a vehicle for change, to spark hope, spark anger, you know, to spark a conversation out of disagreement. Like, whatever it takes for us to get around the table to create change for our future, let's do it. And I hope this podcast is
there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does that. Cool. All right. Thank you. High five. Thanks for being so close to me so that we could be on Instagram Live. Thank you, everyone who joined and commented.
Appreciate it.
I can see my sister is on there.
Too. Oh, much love.
Okay. Signing off.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Humanize. Please remember to like and subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss an episode. Join us on Instagram or Facebook to continue this conversation at The Humanize Podcast.
Let us know if you want to learn more about the professional trainings we offer. And of course, tune in next time as we continue the work. Thank you and much love.